Welcome to Have You Heard, the AABP podcast. My name is Dr. Fred Gingrich. I'm the executive director of AABP. Today we are joined by a dual DVM PhD candidate, Conrad Shelkoff from Kansas State University. Conrad was the lead author on a paper published in volume 57, number 2 of the Bovine Practitioner, which evaluated whether eNose technology could be used as a screening tool for ketosis in dairy cows. This technology has been used in human medicine, and there are potential applications in cattle medicine. Stay tuned as Conrad walks us through this interesting paper. Welcome to our show, Conrad. Please introduce yourself for our listeners.
Yeah, hi, Fred. I'm Conrad Shelkoff. I'm a fourth-year veterinary student at Kansas State University, and I'm also a concurrent PhD student as well under the Diagnostic Medicine Pathobiology Department within the Kansas State College of Veterinary Medicine. Within my PhD program, I'm co-advised by Dr. Mike Apley and Brian Lubers.
Those are some great mentors and advisors to have. We are going to discuss today a paper that was published in 2023 in the Bovine Practitioner, volume 57, number 2. The title of the paper is Comparison of Electronic Nose and Conventional Cowside Diagnostic Tools for Detection of Ketosis in Early Lactation Cows. And we're very appreciative that this paper was submitted to the Bovine Practitioner. I'm very impressed that a fourth-year veterinary student was the lead author on this paper, and we're going to walk through the paper for our listeners today, but I do recommend that our listeners refer to that paper and read it. It's a really great practical paper, which is what the Bovine Practitioner publishes. So, Conrad, let's start off by reviewing ketosis in dairy cows. What are the typical ketones that increase in cows with ketosis, and how do veterinarians or producers usually measure these?
Yeah, so the common ketones that are measured and that increase in ketosis are acetoacetate, acetone, and beta-hydroxybutyrate. These are all breakdown products of fatty acid metabolism, which happens in a negative energy state in the cow. These are measured in a variety of ways. Your gold standard way of measuring your ketones would be through like a diagnostic lab. They usually do serum or plasma beta-hydroxybutyrate testing. But as we know, there's a lot of cow-side tests out there now. Most of them test the beta-hydroxybutyrate through the blood. Those are becoming fairly prevalent and easy to use. Also, we have urine and milk dipsticks that also work as well. And those can also measure acetoacetate and acetone as well. So depending on what test you have, they do test the different ketone levels, but they all do a pretty good job of testing whatever works for their platform media.
Many of our listeners that work in dairy medicine are very familiar with ketosis, but I always think it's a good reminder, and this is something that the paper addressed, what's the average cost? What's the economic impact of a case of ketosis for a dairy farm?
Yeah, that's a great question. From what we see in literature, from some economic analysis papers, shows that the average cost for a subclinical case of ketosis is nearly $300 or so. The ketosis itself is not the final endpoint that takes the cow down, but really it's more of a gateway disease. It brings on a decreased milk production. It decreases reproductive performance. And then we see increased culling rates and then development of other diseases along with treatment costs. So it really just gets the ball rolling for costs to start adding up. And around $300 is about what it costs per case.
That's good information. So let's talk a little bit about electronic nose technology. I find this very fascinating. As I read this paper, I was completely unaware that this technology even existed. So why don't you explain to our listeners what is electronic nose technology and then maybe some potential applications that might be considered for farms?
Yeah, so electronic nose technology is a fairly new technology that has been used for disease diagnosis. A lot of research has been done on the human side of things, but very little has been done on the veterinary side of things. So just the basic platform of an electronic nose is that, as the name implies, it's a nose. So what it does is it sniffs samples. So the machine is made up of an internal board that has a variety of sensors. The one that we use for this project had 32 sensors, but basically the machine itself will pull in a sample headspace. A sample headspace is, let's take, for instance, milk. Within a container of milk, you have the milk itself, the solid liquid portion, and then right above that, you have an air or a headspace, as they would call it. And that contains a variety of volatile compounds. That's what gives milk its unique scent. Or if you think of a candle, you light a candle and it burns and it has that volatile compounds coming off. So what this device does is it has a pump inside and it sucks in those volatile compounds from that headspace and then analyzes it across all these sensors. Then that brings up its own unique pattern, or as with the Enos technology, they call it a smell print. It's basically just a fingerprint for that specific sample, and variety of compounds will come across that sample from all sorts of compounds, but these will create its own fingerprint. And then from there, the machine itself can match specific fingerprints from different samples. The premise behind this is, if you think about an animal that may be in a disease state, they're probably producing different compounds, we'll say for milk, for instance, in their milk, as we know, ketones. But also, if you think about an animal that maybe has mastitis or something, there's bacterial products in there, and they're producing their own specific byproducts that may give that sample a unique fingerprint or smell print. So from that, the device itself can do pattern recognition within its interface. So the device can potentially be able to differentiate samples that have a different smell print between the two.
That is fascinating and pretty interesting. Many of us are aware that some people can detect that ketone breath in cows pretty readily. I was always impressed by that. I can't, but this technology is really interesting. So what was the instrument that was used in this study?
Yes, the instrument used in this study is the Cyrenose 320. It's created by a company called Sensigent. And it's the beauty of this instrument is that it's commercially available. If you do some research on e-noses out there, there's a lot of people who have created their own type of e-nose, or they use specific sensors used for detecting a variety of compounds in different industries. But this is kind of an instrument that's made for the medical field, and they have quite a bit of connections within the human research and in human medical side. So it's more adapted to collecting samples from biological samples.
So let's now talk, Conrad, about the study. What was the objectives of this study? And I'd also like to talk about what made you ask this question, if this technology can be utilized to detect cows with ketosis.
Yeah. So first of all, the objective of this study was really twofold. First, it was to compare this electronic nose technology to commonly used other platforms of detecting ketosis that are cow side. The Enos we were using is actually a handheld device that you can carry around, and it is able to give you results in as few as 10 seconds to maybe a minute, depending on the sample you're using. And there's a lot that goes into that. But we wanted to compare that to urine ketone test strips, and also the handheld blood ketone meters, because those are fairly used and fairly reliable in practice. So that was the first objective, was to compare the Enos to all these detection devices used in practice. And then secondarily was really just to evaluate what the clinical utility of each of these diagnostic tools was within a practice setting. Sometimes I feel like in a research setting, we get so caught up on what we're doing internally, but this was taking what we knew from these instruments internally and applying it to a real production setting. I guess why we wanted to know if this would work in cows, we've seen a few papers of it used in human medicine, specifically looking at urine samples. We've seen a few papers where they've looked at diagnosing diabetic ketoacidosis in humans who have diabetes, and that's a similar type of process to ketones in cattle producing an increased ketone level. So that kind of got us thinking about how this would work. And also this technology has the capability to be used on a production setting or within in a parlor setting. Actually, they make different versions of this that can detect or read multiple samples at once. It's something that could potentially be utilized within a production setting if it actually had some utility.
That's great. I'm so interested in all this new technology, and it's just fascinating to me. Let's talk about your data set. Describe the cows in the data set. What samples did you collect? And then what about the timing of collection, which is what we always look at when we're talking about ketosis, is when we're taking those lab samples?
Yes, the study was conducted between August, or between May and August in 2021, and we used the Kansas State University Dairy Research and Teaching Herd. We did a rolling enrollment where we had 60 cows that ended up being entered in this. They were primiparous and multiparous Holstein cows that once they freshened, we started collecting data on them. So really, once an animal freshened, we would collect up to three separate time points. The way our study worked, we collected on a Monday, a Wednesday, and a Friday. So let's just say a cow freshened on a Sunday. She would be collected on Monday, Wednesday, and then Friday after calving. And then we were able to get three good measurements in that close up period after calving to determine what her ketosis status really was. We ended up enrolling 60 cows throughout the summer, and that ended up being roughly 170. I think it was 170. We collected blood and urine from all those, or blood and milk from all those. And then we ended up with like 160 urine samples. Urine was a little bit more difficult for us to collect just from the aspect of moving cattle to the stanchions and getting samples collected. So sometimes we weren't able to obtain urine samples, but we did collect 172 blood and milk samples and 160 urine samples for analysis.
Walk us through the results of your study, Conrad. How did each diagnostic test for ketosis perform?
We'll start off with what our diagnostic tools are again. So I guess take a step back. We did submit serum from all of the samples taken to the Kansas State Veterinary Diagnostic Lab for a serum BHB test. And that served as our gold standard test. Whatever result came back from there was considered either ketosis positive or ketosis negative. The cut point we used was 10. We used 10 milligrams per deciliter. And if any of you use the Precision Extra, that comes out to about 1 millimole per liter on that device. The conversion's about tenfold from milligrams per deciliter to millimoles per liter. We used the diagnostic lab test as our gold standard test, and then we were able to compare our other devices to that to determine the results. And what we were looking for was the sensitivity and specificity. So our other devices we used were the urine ketone test strips, which obviously they used urine, and those were then evaluated against the gold standard test. We also used the Precision Extra ketone meter, which looks at whole blood. And then we also did the ENOS, and we did the ENOS on milk and urine. So when we get into just the results here, pulling up the table in the paper, table six is the one which looking at test sensitivity and specificity of these three cow-side diagnostic tools. Again, we used the Precision Extra for blood, and that test came back with a sensitivity of 93.8%. and a specificity of 92.9. And then we had the Rely on Ketone test strips, which had a worse sensitivity at 58.6%, and then a specificity that was much better at 99.2. And then our ENOS performed much below those other two tests. The ENOS on milk was somewhere around 60% for sensitivity and 40% for specificity. And then the ENOS for urine had a sensitivity around 20 with a specificity around 80%. So really, looking at these data, we see that the Precision Extra and the Rely on Ketone test strips had really good sensitivity, or at least the Precision Extra had really good sensitivity. The Rely on test strip, not as good, but better than the... And then when we look at specificity, the Precision Extra did well, but the Rely on Ketone test strips did much better at 99%. So that's really the basis of what went on there. If listeners are interested in knowing more about the ENOS, that we went into a bunch of modifications. You can run the ENOS through a lot of different algorithm settings and they can get different results from that. We don't really need to hit on that in here just because at the end of the day, the ENOS performed much under the other two tests. But if you're interested in that, you can definitely read about that in the paper.
Yeah, there's a lot of information in there about the Enos technology. Again, I would refer our listeners to the paper to get those details, but appreciate those results that you just shared with us comparing this technology to the diagnostic tools that probably a lot of dairy veterinarians and producers are using on farms today. Let's talk a little bit about another section of the paper that I found interesting, Conrad, which was the positive predictive values and negative predictive values for the various prevalence estimates of ketosis that were evaluated.
Positive and negative predictive values, just to bring about the definitions again for those who may not be as familiar with them. The positive predictive value is really the probability that a positive test actually diagnose the disease, whereas the negative predictive value is the probability that an animal that tests negative is truly disease-free. When you look at that, this research study, the sensitivity and specificity is really the internal elements for our paper under our specific population of cattle tested. I believe it came out to 8 for our internal ketosis prevalence. However, when you look at other practices or other dairies around the country, they obviously aren't going to have the exact same prevalences. So the negative and positive predictive value adds that element where we can add in an individual's dairy's prevalence, and then we can see how these tests are going to perform. So from our research, we determined that prevalence of ketosis ranges anywhere from about 9 to 10%, and this is talking about subclinical ketosis, anywhere from about 9 to 10% prevalence to all the way up to 35 on operations. And we know that since it's subclinical, a lot of these go undiagnosed. Where positive and negative predictive value come in and really shows us how much we can rely on the results of the tests. So if we go to, so for instance, on table 7 in the paper is the one that really brings this about. But if you look at the Precision Extra, the blood ketone test strip, we know that one had fairly good sensitivity at 93.8% and specificity at 92%. But when we look at when disease is low, so 10% prevalence, our positive predictive value isn't really the most reliable. So looking at the Precision Extra, it had a 59% positive predictive value. So really what that means from the Precision Extra is if we get a positive test when prevalence is low, we really only have about 60% confidence or 60% probability that that test is actually accurate. But then when we look at negative predictive value, so our disease is real low at 10%, and we take that the internal sensitivity and specificity and look at that from the Precision Extra for negative predictive value, we see that we're all the way up to 99.3% for our negative predictive value. So on the Precision Extra, if we were to get a negative result, we'd have 99.3% probability that that's probably a true negative result. Really only rely on one side of the test when you get a result. From this, you can see that a negative test result is fairly reliable, whereas as a positive test result, maybe not as reliable. It's important to note, and we also put in some nice charts that really model how these tools will perform against a wide variety of prevalences. But in general, as prevalence increases, your positive predictive value, regardless of the test, will always increase. And then as prevalence decreases, your negative predictive value of that test will always increase as prevalence decreases, which intuitively does make sense. But then when you look at it across the prevalence ranges with the number of values, it can make it a little bit easier to determine what test to use instead of just looking at the sensitivity and specificity that may be included with that product label. Just to dig a little deeper into that, when we're looking at the tools used in this project, the Precision Extra tends to be the best tool for our negative predictive value or trusting a negative test. So if you were to go out and test a group of cattle and one would come back negative, you'd probably have a pretty reliable knowing that would be a negative test across all prevalence ranges. Now, the opposite can be said for the Rely on Ketone test strips, which did much better from a positive predictive standpoint. These urine test strips performed the best from a positive predictive value standpoint. So if we were to go test a cow out there and she comes back with a positive on the urine ketone test strips, we probably know that positive is fairly reliable. At a 10% prevalence, they came back to be about 90% probability that would be a positive result. Whereas as the prevalence increases, we get to about a 98% probability that that positive test is a reliable test. Now, I think, not to get too far ahead here, but to think about how you would apply this to a ketosis setting, when you think about the disease of ketosis, applying an individual treatment for a case of ketosis is usually pretty effective. It can be relatively inexpensive and has minimal adverse effects. So when thinking about the optimum tool, if you were just to choose a single tool, thinking about that optimum tool, you would probably land on the Precision Extra. The Precision Extra, you know that you're negative since we have the highest negative predictive value, that our negatives are probably true negatives, which means that anything that tests positive, it may be positive, it may not be positive, but applying the treatment probably isn't going to cause an adverse effect to an animal who is maybe not in ketosis, but you're catching all those positives. So just from that standpoint, the Precision Extra as a single tool from the ones that we've tested tend to be the most probably applicable tool on the dairy operation.
That's all great information, Conrad, and further validates the use of the cowside blood BHBA meters that many veterinarians are using, and really appreciate that explanation for positive and negative predictive value. Always good to walk through that when we're performing diagnostics or recommending to caregivers on farms about which diagnostics to perform. Let's talk a little bit about what were some of the limitations that were identified in your study.
Yeah, talking about limitations, and one we might not get on as much, but was a big limitation for our project start, was this herd that we were utilizing the cows from, it's actually really well managed from a ketosis standpoint. We had limited positive test results. Prior to the study, we set our ketosis cut point at 10 milligrams per deciliter. If you look at the literature, there's not a definitive cut point for ketosis, which can make it hard to determine what cut point to use. We probably chose a little bit of a lower one, but the cut point for ketosis can range anywhere from 10 to 14 milligrams per deciliter for a subclinical case. So that in itself made it a little tough for us because it took a little bit for us to come up with enough positives. And I didn't hit on this as much on the Enos, but the big thing with the Enos device is that you can't just take it out to the dairy and start using it day one. You have to train the device to known positives and known negatives. So using a diagnostic lab test where we consider that the gold standard, that's the best way to collect a certain amount of known negatives and known positives. In our case, we went till we had 5 known positives, then we can match that with 5 known negatives, and then go across and start using that device within the herd. So that was one of the big limitations, and maybe not hit on as much, but there's not much we could do from that from our research standpoint. Another big limitation for us was we were using the sample type of milk and urine. And when you think about the Enos device, it's made to differentiate samples based on their specific smell print. However, it may not be great at differentiating samples on a gradient. So think about ketosis in milk. Every animal that we tested in this project had some level of ketones within their milk. Some may have been low, some may have been high, but they did have ketones. So maybe this device is better at detecting, hey, there's ketones in here, but it can't really determine the exact level. Also, thinking about milk, there's a lot that goes into milk, the substance of it. It contains fats, proteins, a variety of other products. And sure, we measure ketones, but this device isn't measuring ketones. This device is measuring the whole sample composition as a whole. So if the milk contents are actually very similar between a ketosis positive and a ketosis negative cow, we would not expect that device to be very good at differentiating the two. We were a little shocked we didn't have better results with the Enos in the urine, because there are some cows that do have no or very limited ketones within the urine. And with that sample being highly diluted from just having water and stuff in it, we thought we'd be better able to detect that. But unfortunately, we didn't get the results we probably were hoping for from the Enos. This is still pretty early on. We weren't really sure what we were going to get. Another limitation is we really just put this device to the field right away. Our mantra was more, if this device isn't going to work in a field setting, there's really no point in doing a whole lot of background work, because our entire goal was to find a device that would work well for a practitioner or a dairy operation that we could apply and not get stuck up in the weeds of trying to detect minutia that isn't going to make a clinical difference at the end of the day. So that was a big determinant there. But yeah, the sample type itself was complex. Another thing really to think about is, and we go into this in the paper, but the Precision Extra itself, you can change so many platforms within it. You can change the different algorithms it uses to separate samples. We did a good job of working through the algorithms to see which ones would work for the data set we had, and we feel pretty confident that was the best we could do with our own data set. But there's a lot of different processing parameters that can be changed. And then another big thing this goes along with, that we didn't have very many positives, maybe our ground truth. So a ground truth would be the laboratory gold standard test result. So that if that we determine as positive, that would be our ground truth. Or if we determine that as a negative from the amount of ketones in it, that would be another ground truth. We were working in the range of, like, our positives were somewhere between 10.5 to 12 milligrams per deciliter. And our negatives were in the range of 8.5, 9, all the way down to 4 milligrams per deciliter. So the margin between a negative and a positive sample from ours was very minimal. So it'd be interesting to see how this device would do with a wider spread between the positive and negative classes within the device. If we were up to 30 milligrams per deciliter versus 10, can the device detect that? That would be an interesting question to ask, and maybe future studies can hit on that. But that also comes to the question, if we're detecting 30 milligrams per deciliter, that cow's probably in clinical ketosis, and we've already caught those signs earlier than this device is going to detect. And then on top of that, we really just took milk and urine, and we analyzed it in its whole form. We didn't do any further processing of it. We waited a little bit longer on some samples to see if maybe that would generate more volatile compounds, and we really didn't find a whole lot of difference between waiting time-wise. But you could do a lot of post-sample manipulation, maybe dehydrating out the sample, adding other substances in to bring about the ketones or other biochemical components within it. So there's a lot of groundwork that we laid out in this project, but there's a lot more work that can be done to further optimize the enos. But yeah, we tried to lay out in this paper everything we did for the enos in case someone really wants to get in there and start using this device. They can see what worked and what didn't work for us in this paper.
Yeah, and I think that is one great thing about the paper is how you walk through how the device was used and set up, et cetera, and trained. A negative result is just as useful as a positive result to practicing veterinarians, because it's important for us to validate the equipment that might be applicable. What you mentioned a little bit about future research. Where do you think maybe some future research could be done with this enos technology? Is there potential applications on beef and or dairy operations potentially?
Yeah. So looking at the human research, some of the, they've actually had some really good results differentiating out bacterial species or bacterial genuses too. Within, for instance, urine samples, there's some human studies out there that looked at diagnosing like a UTI and being able to use this device to determine what bacterial species is really causing or the main one in that UTI, and then further applying treatment from there. I think from a clinical, like, mastitis standpoint, if you could get the device to differentiate bacterial species, maybe we could determine, you know, if we're working with an environmental or a contagious species and then tailor our treatment from there. There's been a few papers that have looked at electronic nose use, very minimal, but with mastitis and metritis treatment in cows and differentiating that based on the substances produced. So there's definitely people working on these. It maybe not as much. I don't think this technology has quite hit what its capability could be yet, but people are really working towards it. We ran another study, actually, with those that we haven't published yet, but we were looking at respiratory samples. So really trying to diagnose respiratory disease in young calves. And we actually had some pretty promising results very early on in our process, but we're using the device now to see if we can determine animals that have a specific respiratory component to their disease and going from there. But yeah, there's definitely capability in dairy and in beef. The beautiful thing about this device is that you can use it on any type of sample that has a volatile component, and you'd be shocked at what can have a volatile component. We've actually had pretty good success at just using like a nasal swab and being able to pull a volatile component off of that pretty well. That's the cool thing about this device is that it can be used with almost any disease process and has the capabilities from research done previously to really potentially diagnose specific strains of diseases, not just diagnosing a specific disease, but maybe what the underlying cause of that may be.
Conrad, I really appreciate you doing this research as well as submitting it for publication in the Bovine Practitioner. When I hear our younger colleagues and the research are doing, gives me great hope that your generation will be able to figure out a lot of stuff. And that's really neat, I think, and gives me great hope for veterinary medicine and bovine veterinary medicine. Last question, when you get your double doctor, your DVM PhD, what would you like to do as your professional career?
That's a great question, Fred. I initially coming into vet school and starting a PhD, I had minimal desire to practice. I really thought I was going to go to either academia or industry or maybe a government sector. But the farther I get into my veterinary degree, the more I don't want to get away from practicing. I don't have a specific career path laid out. Hopefully the right one will come around, but I'd like to incorporate practicing along with research together. So we'll see how that comes out in the next few years here.
Well, I look forward to watching your career grow, and there is lots of opportunities out there for doing what you want in bovine medicine, Conrad. So thanks again for participating in this podcast and for your research publication. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.